Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I'm Gary Payne, lay leader for this morning. We're an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome everyone to our church. We wish to extend special hospitality to those of you who are guests with us today. Please join me now in affirming our mission statement, printed in your order of service, or you can find it right across the wall to my right. We gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice. The reading for today is a poem by Mary Oliver, The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
For our time of meditation, may I offer this? Let us bring the people of Japan into our hearts. In the middle of buying groceries, the shelves began rocking, cans and bottles smashed and spilled upon the floor. While talking with a friend, the walls began to shudder. The bookcases tipped and the glass smashed. In an ordinary working day, the shaking began. Monitors wobbled, lights rocked. Following protocol, people cowered under their desks or met out in the courtyard, laughing nervously at how long the tremors lasted. And then the water rose, lifting up and claiming everything and everyone within its reach. So many were gone in an instant. So many homes destroyed. And now there is even more danger. Let us hold them in our hearts. I am here to report back to you all that prayer has been discovered amongst Unitarian Universalists. Back at the end of November, I was up here and I mused a bit on what prayer might look like for us. And after we dispense with the more juvenile aspects of prayer, oh Lord, what about number six things? I asked you all to consider the possible uses of prayer, and to tell me about your experiences with prayer. And many of you kindly responded with wonderful stories. And yes, despite your stern exteriors, many of you have private rituals and words that, if looked at out of the corner of the eye, would bear a strong resemblance to prayer. This might be unexpected for those who don't know us well. We don't have a fixed liturgy of prayer in our denomination. The rituals and words at this church are not necessarily shared by other UU congregations. You cannot walk into any Unitarian Universalist church in North America and hear the same words spoken at the same part of the service. Our congregational roots give us the freedom to conduct our worship as we see fit. Sometimes this includes prayer, sometimes it doesn't. While we treasure this freedom, some have pointed out that we might actually have a hollow space, a place otherwise filled by a shared and powerful practice of prayer. We have no common words to carry us through the rough parts of the journey, no call and response that wraps everyone together. And honestly, it's my guess that we would not trust any attempt at a one-size-fits-all common prayer. But while Unitarian Universalists are expected to build our own theologies, we are often not given the tools or formal instruction on how to build any prayers. And in some ways, this is an underdeveloped part of our denominational psyche. We're all over social action, and we're pretty good at the more cerebral bits of spirituality. But too often, we don't do the basics of grief or loss very well. And when we hit these terrifying transitions of life, we have no vocabulary to see ourselves as something part of larger. And we feel uncomfortable with our human need to ask for assurance in the face of self-doubt or crisis. Some have even said that this is a shadow issue for Unitarian Universalists. Shadow because prayer was often rejected when we migrated out of mainstream churches. It was left behind or actively pushed away as a superstitious vehicle of dogma. But so often, that which we reject is exactly that which we need to be whole. And just as we're slowly re-examining and reclaiming God talk and other aspects of spirituality, the necessary re-examination of prayer will provoke anxiety until we learn to put prayer into a UU framework. The good news is that when we do pray, we are inclusive and expansive. And as a lifelong UU, I see this empty spot as open and beckoning, a blank book that each of us is expected to fill in. But how do we begin? Many of us started with prayers from our source traditions, and like careful seamstresses, we let out places that were too tight, and we added ease with amended words, and several people shared fresh translation of the Christian Lord's Prayer, which they used to serve as their grounding point in their days. Listen to this version. See if it fits better. Great Spirit of all the universe, Father and Mother to us all, we stand here in gratitude for all that is given to us. Please guide us to an awareness of the profound peace, wholeness, growth, and bounty that is possible. Teach us to recognize grace and forgiveness and to practice this in our lives. Bring us what we need each day and guide us to the contributions we can make that give our lives meaning. Thank you. Amen. Blessed be. Doesn't that fit a little different? Others among us left our home traditions and struck out into wilder woods. We learned to pray or meditate from other teachers, foreign and domestic. And though we eventually made our way into this sanctuary, we brought along some interesting souvenirs from our experiences. Handy little bits of Buddhism, calming affirmations, things which struck and stuck with us, and are touchstones that we reach for in moments of crisis or joy. And then there are also the homemade prayers, made from durable materials we found laying about, or custom cast. Here are some tips to guide you in this process. 1. Remember that God is not God's name. How you address your prayer must only make sense to you. Whether you choose to focus on the holy outside or to connect more closely with the divine residing inside your own skin is, again, your choice. Prayer need not have anything to do with the supernatural. It can be a humanistic, a naturalistic, or an ecstatic grounding of the self in the moment. Retired UU minister Annie Furster has pointed out that the traditional prayers were once new, and that the Psalms of the Hebrew Bible were created by poets and lovers. And she instructs us to think like poets and lovers as we set out to create our own prayers. When I sit in church, I close myself in to more closely feel the warmth and pulse of my palms pressed together. I feel my own breath close by. I find my center where my universe spins, and I breathe. I find my bones and my blood, and I breathe. I find my skin and my nerves, and I breathe. And then I still myself just enough to become aware of the ever-present. And that is when the tears of astonishment begin. In my earlier sermon, I spoke of prayers of intercession as a more juvenile form, but I've since changed my mind. Mature prayers of petition are not self-serving, whining, or wishing. Truly mature prayers that ask for something beyond one's self can be powerful and healing. One man explained that he'd never been taught to pray, but now that he's older, he finds himself praying frequently. After surviving cancer, a heart attack, and stroke, I say he's entitled to whatever makes him strong. But here's what struck me about his prayer. It's simplicity and selflessness. The prayer he utters during times of stress or suffering consists of this one simple sentence. Oh God, help this go well. Oh God, help this go well. He admits he doesn't know what going well might mean, but he's just seen so many ways that things can go bad. And no, he's not asking for the best, just well. He'll be grateful for that. Now, let's think of the children. How, or even should we teach our children to pray? Must we demand that they give thanks for what they actually know is their birthright? And I doubt that many of us have laid them down to sleep, their little souls offered up for God to keep. But what prayers might we weave above their heads so they feel loved and protected throughout the night? Okay, when our son was born, we filled his nursery with a Korean grandmother spirit face, a St. Anthony medal, a Sri Lankan tiger mask, a Turkish glass eye amulet, and a dream catcher that his grandmother wove to keep him safe from evil spirits. And for the record, he's always been a very good sleeper. After listening to my first sermon, A fellow shared one prayer memory. He remembered being a little kid out shopping with his mom. And they were at the shoe store, and he saw one of those sit-in metal cars, the kind that usually had pedals. But this one was battery-powered, and it was on display as a prize for a drawing. That car totally captivated him. He was filled with utter desire. He became obsessed with it and probably annoyed his parents over it. He prayed to win that car. He prayed hard. But for some reason, he gave God an out. Dear God, let me win that car or let me forget about it. It was 20 years before he ever thought of that car again. He's still not sure why he gave God an option. And he's still not sure why the event came back to him decades later, but he recognizes that it reflects that insight that Kierkegaard gives us, that the function of prayer is not to influence God, but rather to change the nature of the one who prays. My 12-year-old daughter recently reported with some bitterness, she's done with prayer because she's tried it and it doesn't work. Thinking back to my own trip through that maelstrom that is the 12-year-old girl's world, I had to agree with her that prayer is pretty useless here. But this is because I suspect that if there is a God, like so many fathers, he prefers to jam his fingers in his ears and hum loudly when faced with his daughter's demand that he referee adolescent disputes. And I also suspect that if there is a goddess, like the wisest of mothers, she simply smiles with compassion at her daughter's despair and says, "There, there," but leaves her to learn on her own. Nevertheless, if we are to be our children's spiritual guides, we'd better start modeling the behaviors that we want them to consider normal and useful. We better show them how we give thanks and what a prayer looks like when it's more than just wishful thinking. When our children were little, our bedtime ritual included a soothing inversion of counting one's blessings. Instead of praying to a God to take care of folks, we would calm ourselves by bestowing blessings. Blessings on Grandma Jerry. Blessings on Cousin Bella. Blessings on the kitties. Blessings on the baby chicks. Blessings on our neighbor Helen. Our lists were exhaustive. Exhaustion was part of the point here. But more importantly, the ritual was one where we called for and implicitly co-created the blessings. We did not teach them that blessings are the sole labor of God. Blessings are our work as well. And by spooling through our friends and family and pets each night, we closed down one day and laid out our work for the next. And now, what about those of us for whom prayer has no use? There are many of us for whom prayer simply feels like a hollow chanting into emptiness. And I will acknowledge that prayer is not essential for human happiness. However, for those of us who do not feel a need to connect to an eternal presence, may I invite us to connect to the essential parts of the human experience that is best expressed in poetry. For there are times in our lives when ordinary conversation will not suffice, and we want the finest of words to see us through the moment. And this is where poetry serves us and saves us. Go find a poem. Long or short, or old or new poem, dig one out of that dusty anthology on your bookshelf. If you log on to poets.org, they will send you a fresh poem every day to your inbox. But find a poem and carry it in your head or your pocket for a while. Read it in your spare moments. Find another one and hold on to that one for a while. Write your own. Gather a whole handful of poems that you can carry with you for those times when you are sick at heart or when joy erupts and spills out as tears. My father retains the last few lines of the poem April Inventory by his friend W.D. Snodgrass. Though trees turn bare and girls turn wives, we shall afford our costly seasons. There is a gentleness survives that will outspeak and has its reasons. There is a loveliness exists, preserves us, not for specialists. That one line, there is a loveliness exists, that is his favorite. It encompasses and affirms all of the grace that he has found in life. And he's carried those words around for some 50 years. Now, there are some of us who still pull up short and feel the scarred places, for whom prayer is still too tightly linked to a previous church experience that hurt or denied us our whole selves. I think of this as spiritual sauce Bernays syndrome. That's the term used in psychology for conditioned taste aversion. It explains the quirk of our brains and palates that associates the last thing you ate right before becoming nauseated with the illness, regardless of its actual influence. What this means is that if you had a meal with sauce Bernays and shortly thereafter become ill, you are likely to find sauce Bernays unappealing for some time thereafter, even if the sauce had nothing to do with the illness. This is a useful adaptation for omnivores. It's a good way to learn to avoid bad foods. However, there are many of us who will have nothing to do with prayer because of the indigestible theologies that it was mixed with, and that left us feeling clammy and unwell. For those of us who might still be made queasy when presented with prayer, may I offer you this soothing mint tea in the form of words from the English mystic Julian of Norwich. All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Now, here's a challenge for the really bold among us, going public with our prayer. What would it be like to offer a prayer as a greeting or farewell? What if you could sincerely and unselfconsciously offer, bless your heart, and not have it taken the wrong way? Would you share a moment before you tear into that basket of chips and salsa that you're sharing with friends and be brazen enough to look them in the eye and say straight on, I am so glad to be here with you. And mean it as a blessing. Would you share a ritual of parting with a dear person? Remember my story about my pragmatic Aunt Ruth, the one who didn't want folks praying for her? I'll tell you something. She does every time when a precious friend prepares to leave her house. She simply says, go well. And those of us who know her and love her say in reply, stay well. It is a blessing that flows both ways and makes the moment of parting sacred. And for my taciturn Midwestern clan, that is some pretty heady stuff. What would your days be like if you were to invoke the holy into ordinary moments? Not as a superstitious warding off of evil spirits, but to simply call awareness to the slippery rocks which we are treading upon. So many things can go wrong in a moment. What would it be like if you could simply ask, "May this go well?" For truly it is the pure heart and pure intention that turns simple words into prayer and simple rituals into holy time. Ours is an empty book, but we are a creative people with the courage to be changed. Keep me posted. Today's benediction is by Ian Huntington Bear. You are in the story of the world. You are the world coming to know itself. May you trust that all you will ever say or do belongs in the story of the world. Amen. Blessed be. Go in peace.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.